This is going to be a fairly short presentation. Roughly a year ago, when Philip heard about what we were trying to do at Lynx, he invited us to come along and make a presentation on the Lynx mandatory routing aggregation policy. And it was expected to be quite a long presentation with lots of graphs showing how we'd affected the aggregation on the internet and how everything was so much better. Things didn't quite work out that way. Okay, for those of you that don't know, the Lynx is the London Internet Exchange. It used to stand for the London Internet Neutral Exchange. Somewhere along the line, we lost our neutrality. It's one of the largest IXPs in the world, 205 members, about 90 gigs of peak traffic. That's on the public switch infrastructure. We're a distributed exchange. We're 7 locations in London. We're Ethernet-based. We always have been. And we were founded in 1994, so we're one of the oldest internet exchanges as well. Okay, to understand this presentation, you need to understand a little bit about how the Lynx is organised. It's a company limited by guarantee, which is interesting, really. English law doesn't have such an entity as an association, so you have to be a limited company. That's pretty well the only thing you can be. So each member of the Lynx owns a £1 share. Okay, so there's, if the Lynx goes under, all of its members stand to lose a pound. So there's not a lot of risk there, but never mind. And because we're a limited company, we're governed by two documents. One is the Articles of Association, which is very, very difficult to change. And one is the Memorandum of Understanding, which is much easier to change, and which really governs how we run the Lynx. It governs the rules under which the members must exist, and the sort of things they have to do to remain a member of the exchange. It's owned jointly by the members, as I say, and all members must comply with the Memorandum of Understanding, otherwise they're liable to be thrown out. And this has happened on one or two occasions. It's threatened quite often, usually when people don't pay the bill. But we have actually thrown somebody out at one point for routing their traffic through other members without asking. The company went bust fairly shortly afterwards. In fact, I think they were out of the country before we managed to serve them with their breach notice. Changes to the Memorandum of Understanding are voted on by the members. At annual general or extraordinary general meetings. And overall, the thing's run by a board and staff. Okay, back in 1994, the internet was still really a sort of nice place. And the Lynx founders had a sense of social responsibility. And in particular, there are two social responsibility clauses in the MOU. One is that routing policy, must be registered in a public routing registry. So that's something like RIPE or APNIC or whatever. And the other statement was that routes should be aggregated as far as possible. Now, aggregated as far as possible. It's a terribly warm and fuzzy statement. And it's, at the time, it sounded good and it sounded, everybody sort of understood it. But it's not very enforceable. And furthermore, we actually only checked it when people joined, and nobody checked it afterwards. There was a feeling that either we should get rid of this statement altogether, or we should actually make it enforceable, measurable and enforceable and regularly checked. So... I'm sure I had another slide in there. Okay, let's go back. Right, okay, and it was only checked for joining. My slides have got slightly out of order here. Right, here's the reason why we have an aggregation policy. It shows the number of prefixes on the internet, and everybody knows this report. It comes from the CIDR report, run by Jeff Houston. And it shows the extent of the problem. Apart from 2001-ish, which we all remember, prefixes have been increasing steadily. And one of the reasons they've been increasing steadily is because people don't aggregate properly. As you can see, the pink line is what really we should be seeing, and the yellow line is what we're actually seeing. which is a bit sad, really. Okay, links 48, back to the story. So when we have to change policy, we always go out and ask the members. Okay, and what normally happens, we go out and ask the members, we ask them to pass a resolution, then we go ahead and do it, and then finally we put it into the memorandum of understanding. And links number 48, links meeting number 48, passed a resolution to adopt a mandatory, enforceable route aggregation policy. It was a fairly close vote, 19-17, but nonetheless it was a mandate. And the council got charged with coming up with an algorithm and a means of enforcement, which we duly went away and did. And what we came up with was these proposed rules. That the total announced blocks from an ISP, not from their customers, just from the ISP's autonomous system, should be less than n times 2 plus 3. Okay, where n is the minimum number of blocks that they could possibly advertise. So we multiplied it by 2 to make it a bit of slack, and we gave 3 on so that small ISPs could have a little bit more slack. And, well, at least it's measurable. And we were proposed to reduce this in 2006 to n times 1.5 plus 3. And I suppose maybe we thought that one day it would be n times 1 plus 3. But anyway. Okay, so, okay, fine. We now have the rules, and somebody went away and wrote a script to actually look at the number of routes people were advertising and produce a sorted list of sinning members. And we notified or identified the members who actually need to take action, the ones who would be in breach if this rule was actually voted in. And we gave a fair amount of time for this action, and we started discussions with members. We actually prodded them and said, look, do you realise you would be in breach? The other thing we noted was that you would need to make provision for emergency, for transient and emergency situations, and we'd just apply common sense in this case. And then the idea was that at Link's quarterly meetings, we would publish the list, and everybody would cringe down in their seats and go away and fix their networks. And this works quite well, actually. It's surprising. Okay, so by December 04, we'd had this thing in place for about 2 or 3 months. We actually saw some substantial improvements. Examples here, UPC was originally 8th on the list. They were well in breach, and they moved down to 63rd, well inside, which is fine. Limelight moved from 23rd right to the bottom of the list. Very good indeed. Colt, Internet, RedNet, Solnet, they all moved to 0% deaggregation, which was very, very good indeed. So what this proved was that things could be changed. And the members who did actually exceed the 2x metric did actually say, we're going to fix it. Okay, naming and shaming seemed to be working, which is great. One or two large ISPs said, well, look, we've got huge blocks of IP addresses. We really don't want to announce the whole /14 or whatever. Would it be okay if we just announced /16s? And we all agreed that anything shorter than a /15 could be actually broken up into /16s, and that would be fine. So that was okay. And the other thing, apart from serving breach notices, people suggested that maybe making route aggregation, good route aggregation, could be a requirement in transit contracts. You know, if you were buying, you were buying transit from somebody upstream, that you might actually say, well, you're in breach of the Link's regulations. We won't buy from you. We thought maybe. And to facilitate this, we put together a BCP, and maybe produce some standardised wording for people to include in transit purchase contracts. All sort of gentle nudges. And other people suggested that maybe good route aggregation was a peering agreement requirement. And if people use these approaches, maybe there will be less need for compulsion, however. And furthermore, we've sort of spread the word a bit. EuroIX gave us a platform to explain what was going on. Most people seemed to understand, which was nice. We made an announcement at Right 50, a presentation, and we arranged to make a presentation in Apricot 06 to say how successful everything had been. RIPE also has a note that says aggregation is a responsibility of network operators, but they encourage to aggregate as far as possible. So, what happened? Many members actually improved their aggregation. What came out of this, actually, was it was very, very surprising that most members didn't even know how badly aggregated they were, that they were advertising /24s and all sorts of crap all over the shop, and they just didn't realise it. So actually providing a metric to show them that they were doing this was actually quite a good thing. And they went away and fixed their router configs, and a lot of it got better. However, and this is where the story starts to take a bad turn, we started to get member backlash. And it was mainly from large, badly aggregated members who, I have to say it, were mostly US-based. And they decided that an internet exchange had no rights to be telling them how badly aggregated they were. And they basically organised a member backlash. Remember, at this stage, nothing had actually been voted into the Memorandum of Understanding. So all of this was advisory up to this point. Anyway, we got as far as Links 50. The opposition managed to get the mandatory aggregation policy thrown out. Okay, so we had now had no mandatory aggregation policy. It was converted to a BCP, and we do have a BCP that you can look at, which makes recommendations as to how you should improve your aggregation. So, in one sense, the mandatory aggregation policy was a failure. It would have been nice to improve the general aggregation across the world, but people didn't want it, which is fine. But there have been some successes. Some Links members will, even to this day, still only peer if you meet the BCP. It did raise the profile of aggregation amongst the members and made them aware of how badly aggregated a lot of them were. And I say an online check's now available. It will be available very shortly. And it will tell you whether or not any particular AS meets the BCP. And that's the end of the story. Any questions?
For those who did...
Who are you?
Oh, my name is Bill Norton. I work for Equinix. I'm from the United States.
But he's not an ISP, so he's all right.
For those who did reduce the rank in the CIDR listings... what reason did they give for not doing that earlier?
Largely incompetence, I think, because it's not particularly easy to see how badly aggregated you are, and because the matter hadn't been raised to their attention, they just hadn't noticed. And I must say, Flag, my employer, was in the top five, and it was purely the fact that we had one or two routers that were misconfigured.
It certainly seems, then, that substantial success could be had merely by notification and finding the right people and continuing down that path without using any strong-arm tactics.
That was what we, it was what we hoped, and we did indeed see that. The CIDR report's been going out for how many years?
Bingo. That's the problem.
Yep. Nobody looks at it.
No, they look at it.
Oh, they look at it and say,
Randy Bush, IIJ, also from the United States, that's what the J stands for. You write to the people in the CIDR report, and they say, we know it, it's intentional.
Yeah.
I know. And I'm cheered by the number of people who actually cleaned up in Europe.
Yes.
I would call it a success, not a failure.
Well, as
you didn't succeed in changing policy. Mm. You succeeded in changing what was announced by the routers. Well, I'm a router geek. That's called success. You can keep your policy.
Yeah, the problem is how long is that going to remain?
Maybe it's a process, not a policy.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. At least we have a BCP now, and at least you can, measure it. But again, it's likely to go the same route as the CIDR report. People will start ignoring it over the years.
The measurement tool might be interesting if it could be generalized.
Yeah.
Go suck route views or risks and show me what I'm doing.
Yeah, but it does actually pull it out of...
No, but if I'm not a Lynx member.
Yeah, you don't have to be a Lynx member. It'll be generally available. You just put in an AS number, it tells you how badly aggregated you are. But then the SADA tool does this as well, as far as I'm aware.
People are just so used to hitting delete.
Yeah, okay.
Give them a website they can go to and play.
Yeah, okay. So maybe there's some success there then.
I have a question here.
Who are you?
Hi.
Go. Who are you?
From BCH. Well, what I would be actually interested in from a Lynx perspective, and not a general AS number thing, is how many of your members say, like, I've talked to a lot of these people who don't aggregate, and they say that, but we can't aggregate our customer prefixes and things like that. So how much do you get that kind of?
Right.
Well, I mean, this is because you had probably had this discussion at the Lynx meeting. And a lot of times I've seen ISP say, we aggregate our routes. We have no control about our customer routes that, you know, we have to pass on as they are to our peers.
Yeah, you're basically, we're actually only aiming at the ISP's own routes, okay, not the customers at all. We decided that was well outside anything that we could possibly do, at least to start with anyway.
So I'm Curtis Linkvist from NetNode. I had a follow-up to that question then. As the topic of the day seems to be traffic engineering, I just had to ask, there is this old mythical concept that as long as you peer, you know, there's even some RFC around this, as long as you peer, you can actually select what routes you want to have. If someone pays you to receive the routes, you can't. Or it's much harder. So do you think that the reason why you were successful, because these were actually peering sessions, as far as you know, but you can't guarantee that there's no transit being sold across links.
You're allowed to sell transit across the links
right,
anyway.
Right, I mean, you don't know what's in. Yeah. But do you see anything that the people who didn't aggregate might actually have been part of transit sessions or traffic engineering and therefore refused to do this? Or what? But the people who didn't do this, what was it purely because they were large and an American, or was it something else behind it?
We never really got to the bottom of the few that wouldn't aggregate. Not all of them were American, I have to say. It was the opposition that was organized, largely by U.S. transit companies. I won't mention the one in particular. But it wasn't just U.S. There are a number of Asian carriers who are quite badly aggregated as well. And with them, to be quite honest, we made no headway at all.
So, I mean, I made the observation that the de-aggregated routes are coming from carriers who are not local to Europe and therefore might be more willing to do traffic engineering than maybe European providers would be, that would have less issues with having to do traffic engineering.
That is entirely possible, yes.
Okay.